There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, what up? Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball. And this is, instead of me rambling about other stuff, I thought I would just kind of get to part two because part one of Steve Wojciechowski was so good. In our last episode, Wojo talked about how unique his upbringing was, on how his meteoric rise in recruiting was, and how he ended up getting Duke. And, you know, then early on at Duke. In this episode, and we broke it up, this is a great conversation with a very interesting, bright man who's incredibly well-traveled. It's really good. There's other stuff in there, too. I mean, he's just so good. So make sure to download, review, write a review, subscribe, rate, tell a friend about it, tweet about it, put it on Facebook, whatever you want. And I hope you enjoy it. Reminder, the Doug Gottlieb Show is daily, 12 to 3 Pacific, 3 to 6 Eastern time on Fox Sports Radio, foxsportsradio.com, the iHeartRadio app, SiriusXM 217 and 203. All right, let's get to part two of my conversation with former captain of Duke, former assistant coach at Duke, former head coach at Marquette, Steve Wojciechowski. So your senior year, now you're a Duke commit. How's that change your senior year in high school in terms of not just how your own team and coaches treat you, but I would guess you're on the road in Baltimore playing in a Catholic school league that guys were giving you the business look, you know, and now you have the, oh, you're going to Duke. You think you're better than everybody.
Right.
Guys,
right,
not right. You. What was that? What was that? Again, from a guy who was on the rise, but more regionally known, to now a nationally known guy going to be Duke's point guard. What was that experience like?
Yeah, I don't remember thinking. I felt like, because the school, Cardinal Gibbons in the Catholic League, we were kind of the school where we were the blue collar school trying to fight to make it. And as opposed to some other Catholic schools where it was not necessarily, in my view, like that. I think I still maintained a little bit of an underdog mentality. And, you know, other opposing fans, players would come after me, but that's fine. Like, we're playing basketball. Like, it's what you're supposed to do. So if because I'm going to Duke, allows you to do what you're supposed to do, let's go. It's still at that point, like when I committed to Duke, and there wasn't message boards and modes of communication that there is now. There was like, can he play at Duke? Is he good enough? And there was, you know, you'd hear that debate. And I remember Gary, we played DeMatha early in the season, and obviously DeMatha is a traditional longtime power. Coach Wooten was still coaching at that point. And Gary Williams came to the game. They had a kid named Tim Hill, who was a really good player, ended up being a great player at Harvard. And, you know, like he said to one of the coaches, like, he's not gonna be able to play at Duke. I'm not sure he's a Division I player. And I heard that after the game, but, you know, I ended up having 25 in the first half and, you know, close to 40 in the game. And I wasn't a scorer, but, you know, so there was still some of that, but I kind of kept my nose down and just the process that got me to this point was not something I thought about abandoning just because I was going to Duke, but it did change the notoriety.
Now in 94, Duke lost on last second shot to a national title, right? He's in Charlotte.
Yeah.
I would guess, because I can tell you, like in 95, I had always wanted to go to UCLA and I turned them down and went to Notre Dame. And damn, if UCLA doesn't up and win a national championship, and Notre Dame was not good, And I remember going like, can you believe like the school, like my dream school part two, UCLA and Duke, you know? You had to die a slow death watching Duke, who you hadn't yet played a game for, lose a national championship on a last second shot.
Yeah, no, it was hard. They're literally a fingernail away from 3 out of 4 championships, but that team was incredible. And one of the things, you know, Grant was such a great player. And I think people today's day and age, forget how good a player he was. One of the rule changes that year, and thankfully they put it back when I got to college, was they changed the 5-second call.
Yeah.
So the ball could be in Grant's hands and he could act like a point forward or point guard, which essentially he was. And he could have the ball for a long time and get where he needed to go against anyone or get the ball where it needed to go. And that run was spectacular. But it's like you're going to this place and they're just rolling people year after year. they are the gold standard without question of college basketball, and it's been like that really throughout my formative years in the game.
So you show up there. What do you remember about show up? This is fall, right? They didn't have summer back then, right? So you're working at home, you're getting ready, you go there. What's first arriving on Duke's campus as a freshman is what?
I remember the pickup games. Because at that time, like you said, you started school. Well, I actually started school late because I was traveling with the USA basketball team. Trajan, Ricky, and I, my freshman class, Ricky Price, Trajan Langdon, the three of us made a U.S. team that won the gold medal in Argentina. So we actually started school a week late. But in the fall, the thing you did to train and get in shape was not like individual workouts. It was you played pickup. And the pickup games were hellacious. Because you had all the former pros at that time who were trying to get back in shape for training camp, come back to Durham. And at the same time, the same thing was happening in Chapel Hill. So you would play in these pickup games and there'd be your Duke teammates, but you'd have the best Christian Leitner, Bobby Hurley, Grant Hill. And then, you know, at times you'd have the guys from Carolina come over. So you'd have like pros on pros, and you'd play either in Cameron or you play in Carr Gym, which was an old school gym. And in the fall at Duke, probably 110 degrees. And you'd play two courts. You have a winner's court and a loser's court. And the games in that gym were some of the best basketball games in history that no one knows about. Because you'd have Duke, Carolina, you'd have former players, you'd have current players, and they were hellacious. And I remember playing in these games and, you know, there's times that you think to yourself, like, am I built for this? You know, am I built for this? Because you're playing against pros. I mean, there's more pros than there were not pros in that gym, and like legit pros, not like drafted and maybe he's going to be good. Like, no, they're going to get to the league and they're going to be good. That's what I remember the most.
Your freshman year was the year where Coach K had to leave the team. So what was it? What really happened? What was it really like on that team?
Well, I mean, it was difficult. I mean, we started the year reasonably good. You know, we were one of the top 10 teams in the country. I think we were 9-3 before ACC season started and played a good schedule. You know, we weren't dominant like some of the teams before us, but we were one of the better teams in the country. And, you know, Coach was really hurting.
Did you know?
Back, I knew as much as I was capable. And I knew enough. Again, he hadn't coached me, so there was no reference point of comparison. But, you know, you'd hear from the other guys, and you knew he had back surgery in the off season, you know, that he was struggling. I mean, he looked tired. You know, he wasn't moving great. And so I sensed it, even though I didn't have a reference point of when he was, you know, at his best. But when I can still remember, you know, we meet in the old Duke locker room, there's players lounge. It was tiny. And anytime there was a serious meeting, we wouldn't meet in the locker room. We'd meet in the players lounge. You didn't really want to have meetings in the players lounge. So when the meeting was called and we all went to the player, you know, you'd have, you know, 14 guys in there, this tiny room. It got hotter than hell. The coach walked in and he did not look good. Physically, you know, emotionally, he didn't look good. And at that point, he said, I have to step away. Like, I'm not healthy right now. And I have to step away. And it was a devastating moment, I think, for everyone in the room. Devastating for coach. It was devastating for the players, staff. And there was definitely a vacuum that was left. I really do believe that everybody that players, coaches, everybody did the best that they knew how. We were just in a situation where we didn't necessarily know how. And the program was so dependent on coach. Like everything ran through him. And he was a dominant figure. When our outlet got unplugged from his, there was a vacuum. And none of, you know, again, in hindsight, there, every one of us, if we're being honest with ourselves, would have done things differently and hopefully better. But as you're going through it, it's hard to step back and recognize that, especially because the ACC was freaking loaded. And Duke was, you know, like, you beat Duke, it's like that now.
Let me help you from the outside perspective. Okay, so this is like the 13-18 team Duke. You won two ACC games. But remember, you're coming off of playing for national championship, right? And you still have, even though a lot of the guys were young, Trajan Langdon was a McDonald's All-American, Ricky Price, you got Cherokee, you got Chief is still there, Cherokee Parks, right? You have Jeff Capel, Chris Collins, right? You got named dudes and you're Duke. Right, so it doesn't matter if Mike Krzyzewski's coaching Duke or Pete Godet's coaching Duke. You beat Duke, you storm the court, right? And now, even though everybody's beating Duke, like it gets to the point where now, if you don't beat Duke, there's something wrong with you. You're at Duke, right? This is all of a sudden, you know, like your life changes. You're at the royalty for college basketball. But what's it like for you as somebody who, I know how you're wired, right? The whole goal in any basketball game you've ever played is to win the basketball game, right? That's what...
Right.
Like, I know how many points I have. I know how many assists I have. The truth is, all I really care about is if I have more points. And now you guys are losing, and Coach K's not there. What's going on in Steve Wojciechowski's mind and life? Because I'll tell you, like, I went to Notre Dame. I'd never been on a bad team before, ever. And... This is the next year. The Big East had four teams in the top 10 and we're in like last place. And it really, really affected me, like really affected me. What about you? What was it like for you?
It was incredibly difficult. You know, you have these visions of what you think your experience is going to be. And at Duke, the expectation was, you know, it's national championship or bust. So at least if you're aiming for that star, if you don't make it, you're gonna land someplace that's generally pretty good. But it was, you know, I was devastated. I don't know, depressed, scared, confused. I mean, all of those things. You know, like you question, like, am I good enough? Is this the right place? Did I make, you know, you go through all those questions that I think college basketball freshmen a lot of times have, because it's always harder than a high school player thinks it is. Always, like, in my view, 100 out of 100 times, even if that person is really good as a freshman. But then you throw on top, like, you're playing at the standard of college basketball, and sure, you're losing. You know, it wasn't like we were getting blown out. We lost a lot of close, like literally last second buzzer beating losses.
You lost twice to Maryland by two, by the way, which I'm sure that would, right? Like you're playing at Duke and you lose to Maryland by two, twice.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that guy named Joe Smith, it was pretty good.
Pretty good. Not bad.
But no, I mean, it was devastating, you know, and it's funny you'd mention it. Like, so we play Carolina on senior night, and Jeff Capel hits the shot. And, you know, most people still think, and it's crazy, like that shot won the game. That shot put us to overtime. But if you watch the bench, like we cheered, like we won the game on the shot. So we go to overtime, and, you know, my playing time was inconsistent. Play a lot some games, play not at all others. It was inconsistent, and it probably deserved to be.
You got DNPs?
Well, I didn't get DNPs, but I was in the single digits multiple times. But for whatever reason, the ball was in my hands in the last possession of the game versus Carolina, where Capel hits a shot to put us to overtime. And we're supposed to run a play. The play gets busted. So I have to go try to make a play one-on-one against Jeff McGinnis, who was a hell of a college player and played in the league and a very good defender. And I missed basically a foul line jump shot. And it was all, I remember going back to my dorm and calling home and saying, like, I can't do this. Like, I want out. I want to transfer. I want to go home. I want to come home and I want to be normal. Like, I just want to go to school. And, you know, my dad never picks up the home phone. So my mom answered and she's hearing this and she's like, you need to talk to your father. So I have to repeat it again. Like, I can't do that. Like, I want out. And he's like, you want out? That's fine. If you want to quit, you can come home and you can work with me on the docks. And I was like, no, that's not what I'm like. I want to go. He's like, no, if you're going to quit this, then you're coming with me. And you're going to work on the docks and you can kiss everything you work for goodbye. And I was like, okay, well, I'm not transferring. I'm not going anywhere. Like, I'm going to make it work. And, you know, I'm crying because if he would have said okay and given me an out, I would have missed out on a lot.
Your whole life.
Yeah.
Your whole life. Right? The butterfly effect things, you know?
Yeah. So, that memory is kind of etched in stone. Because nowadays, when kids make that call, it's like, you're right. Like, your coach is an idiot and you've been wronged. And yeah, we'll find someone else that's going to serve you instead of like, look, man, you're being an idiot. Like, You're going to see this through. You're going to do your best. Whatever happens with your best, like, we'll be fine with, but you ain't quitting.
It's amazing you bring that up because this will land with people as if we're some sort of Neanderthal character, right? But if I painted the real picture of you went to play for Coach K, he's not there, but also you still had Jeff in front of you for a year. And Chris in front of you, Jeff was 2 years, right? He was a junior. Yeah,
Jeff was a sophomore. Chris was a junior.
Right. So,
Sue McDonald, All-Americans in the backcourt, and Trajan and Ricky.
Right. So, you ended up winning the starting spot, but like, you're going to have to overcome those guys. They're not graduating and they're not transferring. Right. So it's not like there's a path. Don't worry. Next year you come back, it's your team and everything's better. Like, if everybody comes back, you still have the same fight, as well as the pressure of you guys weren't very good, not knowing with Coach K. So you were actually the most people would say, dude, get out of there, you know, get somewhere where it's your team, et cetera. And you didn't. So now you come home for the summer, you stay there in the summer.
So I was there for, usually you would come back for second session. So again, we make it through the year. It was hard, but there's hope on the other side, right? Like coach is getting healthier. In fact, before the ACC tournament, he came back and ran one practice. And it was a hard practice.
So what is different about a Coach K being at practice versus not being in practice? Like what was that one workout like? What is that actually like?
Yeah, I think it just tests you physically, mentally, and emotionally, you know, and again, it wasn't, you see some stories now about the practices where it's like all physical, you know, got loose balls. And we may have done that, but there was an expectation and a standard that you were trying to reach. And the reality is, I think a lot of us were in survival mode, not a mode of thriving. We were trying to survive the season because we were going through something that none of us had experienced. And it's not a criticism of anyone. Like what we were being asked to do was hard on everyone. And so we were trying to survive. And when you're trying to survive, you oftentimes get internal. Like you're not thinking about the group. You're thinking about like, how do I tread water long enough to get to shore? And so when he came back, there was a standard of like, get out of your own stuff, throw yourself into what we're doing and do it at this level, physically, mentally, and emotionally. And that one was exhausting because that's not the space I think we were in. And so you're being asked to go to this space that's wildly uncomfortable.
And you played, you guys played in the Les Robinson Invitational. Now, for people who don't know, for people who don't remember about the old ACC, I believe, and you tell me if I'm wrong, there were 9 teams, right, at that time. And the 8-9 game, okay, was the only one played on the first day. And it was locally called like the Les Robinson. Les Robinson was coach at NC State, and NC State seemed to always be in that game. Duke was never, it's the only time Duke was in that game, right? And that was a cannot lose this game. Because if you lose, and I've lost the next year I was in the Big East, we lost to Syracuse, who went to play for a national championship. We lost them the first day. You lose the first day in a conference tournament, especially the Les Robinson game, it's almost like you weren't in it, right? It's almost like you weren't part of the team, right? I would guess like the desire to win that game was big. Do you remember that first ACC tournament?
Yeah. So we ended up playing Wake Forest, who had Randolph Childress and a young Tim Duncan. And that was the tournament Randolph had like 40 points. Like
that was the that was the finger one, right?
Yeah. He crossed up Jeff and he went down and hit a three. I mean, he was incredible. And the thing that was unique about Randolph was he was their point guard, although I don't know if he was necessarily a true point guard. He was a great guard.
Yeah.
So he was good with the ball in his hands, but when he gave it up, he became a scorer. So all of a sudden, like, you know, you and I were used to pressuring the ball, not necessarily chasing somebody off the screens. Most point guards don't necessarily do that. And he was a monster to guard. And so we were up at halftime. We were up, I want to say, double figures at halftime. It's like, oh my gosh, like this, we're going to do it. And we had a bad record, but we were not a bad team. So like, we're going to come in halftime. I was like, we're going to beat Wake Forest. And then Randolph just absolutely dominated, you know, took off and then never looked back, in that tournament. So we lost, and that was the end of that season. And really kind of the beginning of a rebirth of the program.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Leesa, the sleep experts. Here at Leesa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Leesa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Leesa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian. Someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. And also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day. Seriously. It's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if we're being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource, and paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go papertarian? I'll wait. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
How'd you guys turn around?
You know, it didn't happen necessarily quickly for the, you know, the standards of Duke, right? It wasn't like next year we were national champion contenders. We were probably, and I say this, and guys I played with would probably agree, probably the least talented Duke team in a long, long time. I mean, we were playing Stan Brunson, who was a soccer player at meaningful minutes. It was Chris Collins, Jeff Cape, one eye, Ricky. You know, Trajan was out because he had a knee injury and he redshirted that year. Greg Newton, Tony Moore, Stan Brunson. I mean, not necessarily, not household names by any stretch. Not your Grant Hill, Bobby Hurley.
Nobody goes like, hey, remember Brunson?
Remember that team?
Yeah.
And so,
You got it. I remember, I'm looking, you guys got it going late in the year. Like you got it, won 5 in a row, kind of late in the year. You beat UCLA late in the year. They weren't great, but you swept Maryland. Like you kind of got it going.
We did, and Chris Collins had an incredible senior year, and we were 0-4 in the ACC, and it's like here we go again. Now, granted, like look, if this goes sideways, we may not be having the conversations that we're having this week leading up to Coach K's, final game in Cameron. Now, I mean, he would have figured it out because he's just that good. But it may look different than it looks now. We were 0-4 playing at NC State. And, you know, it was a last second game. And the ball is in Chris's hands and we were going to run exchange, which is basically a wing dribble handoff and open the floor for Ricky. And Chris skips handoff and we're down two and pulls like a 26-foot-3 that hit the rim like 4 times. I mean, you know, there's certain times in your life where like time stops or goes in slow motion. Mm-hmm. When he shot that, probably lasted a second and a half. It felt like it lasted for 10 minutes because the ball was on the rim forever. So it bounces, rolls, goes in. And there's like 6 seconds left. So we're up one, but our team starts celebrating like we've won the game. Like literally won the game. Like we're going ape shit nuts. And Todd Fuller inbounds it to Curtis Marshall. And he dribbles the length of, there's 6 seconds left, dribbles the length of the floor, has pretty much a bare ass open layup, and it toilet bowls and rolls out. And we win the game. We win the game. And, you know, we ended up, that started the streak. I think we won like four in a row. So we got back to 500, which is great. And then we lost a bunch in a row. And then we finished where we had to really finish the year winning all our games in order to make the tournament. And we did. We did. And ended up making the NCAA tournament as a team that was, you know, Chris had broken his foot. I started the game in the AC tournament because Chris couldn't play because he had a broken foot, and played really well for about 5 minutes, and then landed on Abina Kesey's foot and had a high ankle sprain, which put me on crutches for like 6 weeks. I mean, our team was hanging on by its thread, but that team really, I believe, and I may be wrong in this, and people may have different opinions. Like that team is, even though we weren't talented, we were tough and we were incredibly together and we knew what was on the line. Like we knew that the name on the front of the jersey was on the line. And even though we were playing against teams that were a lot more talented, because again, at that point, the ACC was freaking loaded.
Yes.
I mean, loaded. I mean, Bobby Surum, Edwards, Carolina's guys, Maryland, Virginia, Corey Alexander, loaded. And we made the NCAA tournament, which for that team was probably, especially given the injuries we had at the end of the year, was probably its ceiling. And they ran into Earl Boykins and Eastern Michigan, and they beat us. But if you early in the ACC season, if you would have said you could get to make the NCAA tournament, I think we all would have been like, sign me up.
What was Coach K like during that year after having missed so much time the previous year?
I mean, I think he was great. I mean, he was intense. He was focused. He coached us hard. He demanded a lot from us. But I think he also knew, like, he had a group that was going to fight for Duke, which, you know, at the end of it, that's what Coach wants. He wants you to fight together for the name on the front of the jersey. And that group did it. And did we have all the weapons or the talent that some of the teams before us had? We did not. But that part of the mission, we executed. And I think he was, man, I hope he's proud of that team, even though he wouldn't trade that roster for any of the rosters that he's had recently, that's for sure.
When you're playing with Kenny Blakeney and you're playing with Chris and yourself, did you see coaching as like a path? Like, was that ever discussed? Did you guys ever sit around and talk? I mean, the fact that there's so many head coaches on that staff, I mean, on that roster, was that ever a part of your thinking or your interaction with each other?
Yeah, I don't remember having specific conversations to that end. I mean, obviously, Chris, you know, came from a coaching family, and Kenny played for a great high school coach. And I was fortunate, I mean, really from the time I was a little guy through high school to play for great coaches. I mean, outside of my family, the people that have had the biggest impact on my life are my coaches. So, you know, again, for me, I thought I would love to be a high school coach and try to have the impact that, you know, my high school coach had on me. I mean, that was kind of my thought process during that time. I don't remember specific conversations like, you know, 30 years from now, like we're all going to be coaching in college. You know, I don't think young brains work that way, right?
Like, but like, I'll just tell you, like, so when we were playing, like me and Joe Adkins, when I was at Oklahoma State, we were both like, we knew it was going to be Sean's job. So we would both like kind of angle for the, like, hey, if I come back, I want to be offensive coordinator. You can coach defense. I want to coach defense. Right, like, right. You do the defensive stuff. But I do wonder you get to your, so the next year you guys turn it, you guys win the ACC, right?
Yeah.
And then, but you did it. You took a transfer. And now, was Rashawn sitting out your sophomore year?
He was, yes.
Which is, I think he was the first transfer, wasn't he?
He was, yes. He was the first transfer. They had recruited him. Again, I was playing, so I wasn't involved in any of this in high school. Played, obviously, for Bobby's dad at St. Anthony's. So they were recruiting him. And I mean, in all honesty, we need more talent.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes when you need more talent and it's not available to you in the normal way you do things, recruiting high school players, then you need to look at other things. And, yeah, Rashawn was sitting out. But after my sophomore year, I remember having a meeting with Coach in the lounge. And
the lounge.
And basically the gist of the meeting was like, what you've done is not good enough. And if you continue to do it, like, you should probably do it somewhere else. And, you know, like, that was a really hard meeting for me. And
who's in the meeting?
You know, it was him and I.
Nobody else. Okay.
And, you know, it was a hard meeting, but it was a meeting I needed. You know, like, there's, I think it anytime you change levels in anything, what allowed you to be good at one level doesn't necessarily guarantee success at the next. And, you know, you get to college and my 2 years to that point hadn't gone necessarily to plan. And I was responsible for that. Like, there were things that I needed to do to give myself the best chance of helping the team and maxing out who I was.
Like what?
And one of the first thing was getting in better shape. You know, like, in order for me to compete against the athletes that we competed against, the advantage I had to have was endurance and conditioning. Because, you know, I mean, I could wear jump shoes, you know, 12 hours a day. Like, it wasn't like at some point I was going to be playing above the rim but I could wear people down, with my conditioning and my effort. Cause I was good at that. It was good. Like, the effort piece I was good at, but I didn't have the condition to sustain it to where it was an advantage, you know? And so I ended up losing probably, you know, I played my sophomore year probably at about 190 pounds. And I started my junior year at about 170.
Wow.
And I was
landline. I love it.
Landline. yeah, I got in incredible shape. Improved my ball handling, not necessarily like my ability to do ball handling drills, but my understanding of pace. Because I think when you're not a great athlete, you have to have incredible.
Love it, the old answer machine too.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah,
it's amazing.
I told my dad I was on a radio show, because if I told him I was on a podcast, he'd be like, "What the hell is that?" So he walked in earlier. He looked in and he's probably thinking, "What the fuck is going on?" Like, he's there's a guy, you can see his face. Like, what kind of radio is that?
Amazing.
So
conditioning you had to do, ball handling,
but like the ability to control pace, right? Like, if it was a matter of going fast, people could go fast. But if I could learn how to change speeds and create space, like, that was going to be my advantage of being able to position the ball where it needed to be positioned. And then hit it, and then being able to knock down open shots. And then probably the biggest thing is using my voice, like, leading. Coach, I think that's one of the things Coach really liked about me in Ypsilanti, was that even though the guys didn't speak my language, like, I found a way to lead them.
Yeah.
And so there was all those things. And, after the meeting, like, I had two choices. I could say, like, this is BS. But I didn't. I remember, one, being hurt, like, to have somebody that you respect to the ultimate level, like I did coach. Like I was hurt that he could feel that way about me. And then the second thing I felt was I was pissed. And I wasn't pissed at him. I was pissed at me because he was right. And committed to that summer, like, you know what? Like, again, like goes back, like, just lay it on the line and see where that takes you. I don't know where it's going to take you. You may end up being a backup. I mean, his guards in front of you are really good. But you won't know unless you try. And so I committed to that and had a great summer. And summer went into fall. And in the fall, I think I was probably, the expectation was that I would be a really good backup point guard. Solid, didn't turn it over. Probably make an open shot. Could run a team. But, you know, not somebody necessarily that could be a starting guard on a team that had aspirations of being a national contender.
How'd you win the job?
I attacked the ball like crazy. And then you're talking about some of my best friends, you know, Jeff Capel and, you know, Trajan and those guys. Like, and again, they were at that time, it was like Trajan is going to be the point. And that's, I mean, Trajan was one of the best shooters in the history of college basketball. Being a point guard is not necessarily, even though he could really handle it, what he, you know, what he did. And I would pick him up. I mean, even in pickup games, I'd pick him up 94 feet. And, you know, we keep track of who won and lost in pickup games. And my goal was, you know, every time that was posted for my team to be my name, because my teams won, to be at the top of the list. And I did that. And, you know, still going into that season, I don't think, even in as we entered exhibition games, I don't think I necessarily started, but like I gave Paul, like I created a discussion of like, I mean, this, like if you ask his teammates, and coach always used to do this, he'd ask like, if you had to pick a starting five for a pickup game, like who would you pick? Because he wanted to see like who the guys thought. And I remember going into my meeting that fall, it's like, you should know that every one of your teammates picked you, which was essentially the goal, right? And so I created a discussion and then ended up starting the first game my junior year, which I think if you rewound, you know, 4 months earlier, people would have said no way. And I played really well and never looked back.
Do you remember who it's against? So I ended up,
the first game?
Yeah.
I don't.
St. Joe's.
No, St. Joe's. You were Steve Bay. He was a good player. But I ended up scoring. I had a early in the season, I ended up having a ton of steals. I had like a, you know, at 7-8 steal game, like, and became the leader. And my teammates, I think, ended up trusting me. The guys I thought I was competing against, the Jeff Capels and the Trajans, were guys I ended up playing with. You know, sometimes you think like, well, it's you versus here him.
Yeah.
But it's, if you're both really good, then you both play. Because coach is in like a tradition, like he'll put up lineup, and he always has put out lineups like, I'm going to play my five best players.
Your junior year was your first year you beat Carolina. You hadn't beat Carolina. Yeah. Was it as significant then as it would seem? Again, total outsider here to the Duke family, but having, there's a lot of things you had to achieve. You got to get back to the NCAA tournament in year two. Great. You're in your starting spot, but hey, you still haven't beat Carolina. Was it significant to beat Carolina the first time you did it?
Yeah, I think those games are always significant. And the fact that they were terrific. I mean,
so at Oklahoma State, right, there's, you only, when I was there, we only played Kansas once a year, or unless you played in the Big 12 tournament. Like they were the standard. And then your season was judged. Did you make the NCAA tournament? How did you do against KU? How did you do against OU? Right. Like even, so I'm just wondering if that is of the junior year, if that's the most vivid memory outside of starting the first game.
Yeah. I think that was significant. Right. Cause I think there's always markers when you're trying to build something or in this case, trying to kind of build it back, there's markers that you meet or things that you achieve where it's like, okay, I mean, we may not be where we want to be, but we're getting closer. And this is a vivid example of why we can say that. And beating Carolina was one of those things, you know, and at that time, I mean, Wake Forest and Tim Duncan was one of those things as well. I mean, I can remember we had lost a bunch of games in a row to Wake Forest in my junior year. Played them twice because it was round robin. Played them at home in the first game, and then we're going to go back and play them again. And at the end of the game, there was a stop action. There was a stoppage. And the officials went to, you know, at that time, I don't even think there were TV monitors on the sideline, but something happened, clock malfunction. And Tim got fouled and he was supposed to shoot free throws, and he sat down on the court, he sat down at the foul line Indian style. And it was in our minds, it was like the ultimate sign of disrespect. And you know, I remember there being quite a bit of emotion around that time. We ended up losing the game. So followed up. And again, the path to the ACC championship at that time went through like Carolina and Wake Forest because they had Tim Duncan. I mean, he was different. So we went down to Wake Forest to play the second game with the round robin. And I remember in the locker room, there was no freaking way we were losing the game. I mean, I'd give a shit if they had Michael Jordan and Tim Duncan. There was no, and everybody was on board, and it wasn't like a coach in front saying like we're not losing, that option is off the table, and we ended up winning the game. And Chris Carwell, who's my assistant now, is at Duke. Again, you talk about lineups. They had Lauren Woods and Tim Duncan, like twin towers, right? Sewell's guarding Duncan at the five with one good shoulder, and we end up winning the game. And then fast forward, we beat Carolina and end up winning the ACC championship. And, you know, I think we were viewed as contenders, but I don't think people would have said beginning of the year, based upon the talent the other teams had and the players, that we would have won the championship. But that was a significant – that was another marker of, like – everybody was hoping they'd go away. They're not going away. So that was an important time.
Woo! Part two is as good as part one. Okay, so part three is coming up next. Just so you know, we got more, including Dream Team, Redeem Team, and coaching USA basketball, and the things that he remembers about it. Plus, what was it like to be fired? You know, what's that like? And how long are you angry for? Are you still angry? All that stuff to come. Oh, yeah. And I got to ask him, if he didn't take the Marquette job, would he be the Duke head coach? Is there any internal struggle that had he kept coaching at Marquette and not lost, would he have been the Duke coach now? All that's coming up. Reminder, the Doug Gottlieb Show, daily, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio, the iHeartRadio app, SiriusXM 217 and 203. Subscribe, rate, write a review, download this thing, tell friends about it. I mean, Mojo is amazing. I hope you enjoyed it. Part 3 is coming up soon. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.